Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio in Fort Wayne by my good friend, my partner in reformatory radio, Ron Martin, with no Barnabas Piper today, baby. It's just you and me and this dude.
Just you and me.
How are we feeling about that? Like, initial thoughts on just that whole dynamic?
Just me and you without Sans Pipe?
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's whenever we're missing... Whenever we're missing the entire crew, it definitely puts a different spin on it.
It does,
you know what I mean?
Dude.
Like the vibe is different. The feel is different. Even though, like, right now, technically, Pipe could be on the other, you know, on the line, but he just hasn't said anything yet. It still feels different.
Do you think he's listening in from the mountains?
Well, with Pipe, you never can tell, man. He's so paranoid. It's hard to tell with B-Pipe.
Do you read Pipe as a paranoid guy? That's fascinating. Go like a minute on that.
Well, I mean, I was totally joking.
Sure.
But is Pipe a paranoid? No, I think the guy is just. I think he's able to compartmentalize these things.
Like, he's a good compartmentalizer, isn't he?
Totally. Yeah. I don't think he's given it another thought. I think this is the furthest thing from his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. If something's not right in front of Pipe, he just kind of crushes it in his mind vice and just moves on.
100%.
I admire that in him, actually. Don't you?
Well, yeah, I don't know that that's one of the beauties of being in NE8 is that you can kind of do that a little bit better than, like, we can,
yeah,
which is, like, we're a little more, like, kind of bothered by, we're just aware of, like, every, like, kind of intricate detail
we carry it around.
Swirling around us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the Annie F. Downs podcast. I am Annie F. Downs, joined as always by that other guy who talks about the Enneagram. No, baby, I love the Annie content. I love that we got into it early. But listen, we have breaking news and kind of a big deal to talk about. Mm. And by a big deal, I mean a big business deal between us and a little company called Visual Theology. And baby, I want to talk about the package that they sent last week, because this is, like, beyond a promo. This is content for the show that's going to kind of turn into a promo, or maybe it's the other way around. But anyway, we got huge boxes in the mail last week. And this all started with you hitting the Happy Rant group chat with a picture of a Wheaties box with you on it.
Absolutely.
You circa, like, 25 years ago, but still, it was you.
I mean, it was circa 2008.
Oh, actually. That was 2008. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
which is a while ago now. If you're like me, baby, 2008 still feels like it was 2 years ago.
It does.
But it was actually like 14 years ago.
I view it as 2 years ago, but it was actually 14 years ago. Yeah, but you were looking young, looking solid in that pic. And I was like, baby, what is that? And then, like, 20 minutes later, I opened the same box in my studio. Just a box of gifts and goodness from a little company called Visual Theology. They did the same hookup for Pipe. We all got Wheaties boxes. In the case of my Wheaties box, they used a picture from, like, 25 minutes ago. So I was looking a little bit older on mine, a little bit more grizzled.
Yeah, and I mean, there's two ways to go with that one, right?
Yeah.
Because I hate something being that old that doesn't rep me very well. But at the same time, it's not bad looking 13 years younger.
Baby, it's a mixed blessing, isn't it? So when people make ironic Wheaties boxes for us in the future, you know, they need to get that right. But I want to talk about, like, emotionally what I was feeling when I got that whole gift. And I want to see if you were in the same kind of emotional space, being that this is an Enneagram podcast. I felt known by Visual Theology.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is they incorporated, like, 14 different in-jokes over the history of the Happy Rant, which is, like, cereal box book promos. Okay, so, like, they got that one checked, because you open the Wheaties box, there's actually some Wheaties in there, but there's also that little vacuum sealed bag with, like, a couple of books. There was a CD, dude, so they got into the 90s thing. They sent me, like, a Wow Worship 1998 CD, which was incredible.
They got it all. They did it correctly.
They did it correctly, didn't they? Like, tons of stickers, tons of free swag, like a little ironic Jesus fish, like, thing for the car. So they got like 14 different in-jokes in there. But, dude, then they sent, like, $150 worth of super soft, incredible t-shirts. My question to you, baby, have you worn the t-shirt yet?
Yeah, man, I actually wore it on Sunday, man. I wore it for preaching and for, you know, doing the church service.
Nice.
Wore it under a jacket.
Yeah.
And it is, man, the t-shirts were, man, they were just that super soft, ultra high qual that we've come to demand.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, we're a little bit pampered and spoiled in our t-shirt.
Yeah, lives. I mean, I don't wear anything that's not that.
Exactly.
And so yeah, it was great, and they're really generous. So man, it's really fun. When, by the way, the product, if you've not gotten the book Visual Theology, it's an amazing book.
Yeah.
It really is stunning. I mean, just the artistic quality and content of it is like off the chart. And then for them to send us like all of sort of their promo materials that go with it.
Yeah.
It's really fun to like receive something that hits at this caliber.
It does. You know yeah. It was a really quality gift. I felt so known, so loved. So cared for by Visual Theology. And this is how you feel if you visit visualtheology.com, which I'm 80% sure is their website URL. And I just confirmed it. It's actually visualtheology.church. So visualtheology.church. Go there. Tell them that we sent you. This is like a Tim Challies production, right? Isn't At Challies involved in this at some level, baby?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I think he was the co-author of the book.
Got it.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's part of the company then too, right?
I really don't know. I can't speak to
that. Dude, they do books, they do posters, they do curriculum, they do apparel, and it's all kind of centered around this idea of taking theology, like theological concepts, like the five solas or attributes of God or whatever, and bringing it to life visually. So I just got some posters in the mail today. So they did not only a gift, they did a follow-up gift. And the follow-up gift was posters, which were so tightly and efficiently packed, you couldn't get them out of your container. I did. I had to wrestle with it for a while, kind of like just grappling with a tough theological concept. In this case, it was tough theology on a poster that I was grappling with in terms of getting it out of the packaging.
Nothing like tough theology on a
poster. Tough theology on a poster. You know, I've been waiting my whole life for it, and it came in the mail today. So check out visualtheology.church. Buy a lot of their products. Tell them that we sent you, and we appreciate their generosity vis-a-vis the Wheaties boxes. That was a thrill, baby.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, again, our promo ads are not quite as succinct as
I know.
As
they're pipes, a little meandering, aren't they?
They are, but we're making them a little more conversational.
We are, making them a little more organic and natural, which I think is the whole point with podcast, sponsorships. But baby, remember when At Challies was like the star maker in our business? Is he still that?
I mean, he's just a highly respected. He's really highly respected in terms of how he critiques.
Yeah.
Whether it's like books or whatever it is, mainly books, I think. But I think he has this ability to sort of give a really, he gives a particular kind of critique to something, and because of his audience takes him seriously.
Yeah.
And so when you do get something reviewed by him, it is a bit of a gold star because you know that he's being thoughtful about it. He's not just, even if he doesn't like something or disagrees with something, he's being thoughtful about it.
Yeah.
And so he's not trying to be sensationalistic. And I think it's just, it's one of those things where he's kind of risen in our tribe as being that guy that everybody takes seriously in terms of, being as Pipe would say, a thought leader.
Dude, but you got that little kiss on the ring piece from Challies back in the day. You were a made man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I mean, honestly, it's, I had one of my books a few years back reviewed by him, and it's really interesting. Like when that happens, you get, you're opened up to a broader audience.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful.
Dude,
I've never met.
Yeah. He's like the Pauline Kael of our business, or like the Roger Ebert,
I mean, I think that's true because I think we need to have that in our circles, because you need to have somebody that good, bad, or indifferent is going to be able to like review things and critique things in a way that like, again, you might not agree with all of his takes, but you trust that he's being thoughtful about it.
Dude, right? Speaking of our tribe, I got a question for you. So I still have not listened to the Drisky Docs. I probably won't, honestly. It's just not a huge priority for me. But I'm getting all the information on the Drisky Docs I get via gossip from other people, right?
Right on.
Who have listened. Yeah, totally. And like, I guess after this last ep, man, people were feeling like the turn that this was taking, or the arc that it was taking, was that it's going to end up in this place of like crapping on Reformed guys, which I feel like is like the lowest hanging fruit imaginable. And we're all like, we should have seen that coming from 100 miles away, because that's just what everybody does, including like So here's something I don't get, baby. This is a multi-tiered question. Like, we do it too, though. Like, we crap on reform guys on our podcast, but we are reform guys. Like, I've never gotten that. So my question to you is twofold. A, why do we do that? And B, like, is that where you see the documentary going?
Yeah. So let me answer question two.
Yeah, sure.
Cosper is a reformed guy, right? I mean, he's like, he's in the circle.
Yeah, but why is it so cool to like pick on reform guys?
Well, here's
the thing. While also being one.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. So I would say, because I've listened to a third ep just dropped last night, but I've only listened to the first two eps. Okay. I mean, you would have to be a hyper reformed, super sensitive reformed guy to think that that's what Cosper was doing, because I didn't pick that up like on any level.
Really?
I mean, he's just trying to tell the story of like literally what happened and how we all kind of come into it in terms of our responsibility in it. It really doesn't have much to do with whether you're reformed or not. In fact,
interesting.
I mean, the reform thing, I don't even know if it comes into it,
really?
To be honest.
Interesting.
Yeah, so for somebody to say that, it just seems like, dude, did you actually listen to it? Because he's not – the whole thing isn't centered around reformdom like on any level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because this can exist – this whole thing can exist in any context. It has nothing to do with whether you're reformed or not.
Okay.
You know, so I feel like that's a reach and a half.
Interesting, dude. Interesting.
Yeah, I would really disagree with that.
Yeah,
that's somebody that sounds like they're not a Cosper fan in general.
Yeah.
And they're looking to find something, anything to sort of say, you know, we just don't like what he's doing because we don't like anything he does.
Yeah, I guess they're feeling like he's giving more love to like the, you know, the Brian McLaren, like Richard Rohr, like whack job early 2000s crowd. But
which is just
again, I haven't listened to it. I have no idea.
Because Cosper is he's a conservative guy.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he's not that guy.
Okay.
So
interesting.
That doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Interesting.
Why we do it in general, to answer your first question, man, I think, okay, kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with TC, with Chally's, man.
I think
it's like, what's the line, man, between being able to talk thoughtfully and even have some critique or maybe even just some humor about some of the things that go down in our circle that we can say either, hey, that's not cool, or hey, that's kind of funny, or
right.
I don't even know what I think about that, or I'm uncomfortable with that. I mean, it feels like we should be, because this thing has been sort of invented and, you know, put together and constructed by us.
Sure.
We should also be able to like have that kind of like, those kind of takes on it if we want.
I get that, right? Dude. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, I don't know.
You know what I don't like doing, though? Just in general, the whole motif of like, I'm a fill in the blank Christian or reformed guy or whatever, but not like that guy. You know what I mean? I don't like playing that game, dude, because I feel like that's you could play that game forever. You know what I mean?
Well, totally.
And it just...
Yeah, no, I mean, totally.
Yeah.
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 Instead of just saying like, okay, look,
this is what I believe. I'm a reformed guy.
This is what I believe. I'm a reformed guy, and it doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything else in the world that said other reformed guy believes in.
Yeah.
And I don't got to like kill him.
Right.
I don't got to destroy his character.
Right.
In fact, I can show some charity and all of those things, but I can also say, dude, that's kind of goofy what he's doing. Like,
sure.
And again, that doesn't mean you're destroying him.
Right.
But I think that's where what we do, where the parody and the humor kind of comes in, because it softens the blow, because we're not here to tear anybody down. We're just here to go, dude, this can all be funny sometimes.
Sure.
You know, if we don't take ourselves so seriously.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I don't know.
No, that's interesting, baby. That's a good.
I mean, I don't know.
No, I know.
It's like, it's hard to know where to land, because like we are kind of coming up to a fine line, baby, which is like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, I don't want to slander anybody. I don't want to gossip anybody. If someone's dead wrong, you can say, well, I can call, if they're just flat out wrong, if they're doing something that kind of hits against what I believe is scriptural integrity, I mean, you can say, hey, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Again, that's not killing someone's character. That's just calling something out.
Right.
But I mean, there's a way to do that.
Right.
That's not inherently mean-spirited.
Right.
And man, I hope that we're not, our thing is that we're not mean-spirited.
Yeah.
I don't want to be mean-spirited.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough though, man. And I've actually felt kind of weird about it lately.
Like how? What do you mean? Flesh it out.
I think like, okay, so I felt guilty last week or 2 weeks ago for not going harder at critical race theory. I felt like I was just trying to please people, and in doing so, I said nothing. Like,
well, baby, I didn't get that at all. I felt like you were just being more of a host and asking questions.
About yeah, it. I was doing that. Yeah. I was doing that. But also, like, all the goofing that we've done on like Owen Strachan over the years, I feel like I probably agree with that guy on like 96% of things. You know what I mean? So it's like, why am I goofing on this guy in order to like look cooler myself? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's just something you gotta. That's something you're gonna have to work out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, it's like, you know, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, I think there's a way to disagree. We just don't know how to disagree anymore.
I know.
It's like we gotta be able to disagree without acting like we're literally like tearing a guy limb from limb just because you disagree with somebody. Yeah. It's like, dude, it's okay.
Dude, the culture only has two speeds, man. You're either tearing someone limb from limb or you love them implicitly. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
And I that's not great, dude. That's just not great.
Well, it just lacks balance. And then if something lacks balance and it keeps tipping, then it falls into lacking integrity.
Yeah.
And I think, dude, the fact that we're even having this conversation and saying, man, we just don't want to tip that hard into those places where, like, I can disagree with Owen Strand. Mm-hmm. I can even make some jokes because every once in a while he says something outrageous that I can say, hey, dude, that's outrageous.
Sure, sure.
Without going beyond that, which would put us into the, I would say, which would put us into the realm of needing to repent
because
it's slander, it's gossip.
Sure.
And dude, I think it's a fine line because we are doing something that is commentary too. So
yeah. Yeah.
Where that line is tricky.
It is tricky, man. It's very tricky. And it felt easier when we were goofing on, who's that guy we used to goof on? The real, like, he was like shiny and glistening. Real big dude. He's got the big church out there on the Eastern Seaboard. Ferdy. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That felt easier because it was like, I probably don't disagree with this. I probably don't agree with this guy on much of anything, but.
Right. I know. So, okay. So there's another point.
Yeah.
So somehow, because Ferdy was never in our circles, we feel okay with sort of tapping on him a little bit more because Owen Strand, well, see, Owen Strand is kind of, he's distancing himself from our circles. And so it's uncomfortable. So a lot of people they're not as sure what to do about that.
Yeah.
You know? So again, so we still, like, without a lot of conversation about it, we still decide what's okay and who's okay to tap on a little bit more stringently.
Yeah. And we kind of do it like we do it on the fly. We do it non-verbally. We've never talked about it. This is like the first time we've ever talked about it.
More or less.
Isn't that fascinating, baby?
And I think it is.
I think this is kind of like my hang up with the Drisky doc, and in part, why I won't listen to it. There's an element of, and I want to hear you on this as an Enneagram 4, shout out Annie F. Downs podcast, which is what this is now. But there's a part of me that feels like every bad thing that's ever happened in the world is my fault somehow. And I'm afraid that I'm going to listen to the Drisky doc and either feel guilty for listening to it because it's like Christian true crime or whatever, or I'm going to feel like I was too much like that in the early 2000s, and I'm going to feel guilty about that. You know what I mean? So in both cases, like, I don't want to listen to it. So as an Enneagram 4, I know you weren't like Drisky in any way in the early 2000s, but does it vibe with you on that level of like somehow, some way I feel indictment with this thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, and the only reason why I know what you're saying, but it doesn't because it's not really the way he presents it. So the thing is, man, what's so funny about it is that, I mean, Drisky is one of the central characters, but it's not really just all about Mark.
Okay.
That's what's interesting. Yeah. So you're not really hearing so much about Mark as you're hearing about what happens when institutions, churches, organizations, // get to that particular place where you have somebody that lacks checks and balances and accountability.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily, it's Driscoll. It's almost, look at it like this, baby. It's like Mars Hill provided Cosby with the opportunity to talk about organizations that have fallen in the same way that Mars Hill has, you know, risen and fallen.
Because
it's not just Mars Hill. You're seeing it. You know, you're seeing Willow Creek and you're seeing these other things that were very similar but different.
Yeah.
So it really just gave him the opportunity to talk about hey, what is this sort of mega church celebrity culture that we have built?
Yeah.
And why aren't we understanding that there's really only one place for it to always end up? And this is where it ended up.
Sure.
He's almost just using Mars Hill as the occasion for talking about something way bigger. That's why I think you would actually like it.
I probably would, dude. I got to just, you know what? I'm going on a big road trip. I'll give it a shot during the trip.
Give it a shot. I mean, listen to the first ep and see what you think.
Yeah, I'm going
to
give it a shot. How long are the eps?
They're probably about an hour, okay. I think. Maybe a little over an hour. Yeah, it's not a huge investment.
Nice.
And the first one is kind of a set. I would say this, man. Mm-hmm. Commit to the first two.
Okay.
And you'll get like kind of a broader kind of, you'll get a broader kind of perspective on
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. I like it.
But I don't think it would move you into that space. I think what you would do is it would help you think about, oh man, like, so this has been a problem. Like in terms of this is a problem in organizations that if I'm not careful, I could be in an organization and let somebody just continue to exist without accountability checks and balances. So
yeah.
I need to think about that. What is my place in this?
Right.
Cause it's not, you're not going to feel like, oh dude, you know, I'm just destroying Drisky. Cause it's just really not what it is.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. It sounds to me like it's kind of an argument for a plurality of elders. I mean, if we're getting real like church polity nitty gritty on the thing, which is what none of these,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Which is what none of these mega church guys have. And what even a lot of small church guys don't have, you know? So,
well, I think you're getting to something there because he talks a lot about that, which is like, man, are you somebody who is part of an elder team? Are you somebody who's a lead pastor that can manipulate an elder team to kind of just think what you want them to think, move in the direction you want them to move? And I think what's interesting about that is, man, regardless of where we are in our particular church or church culture, like these are things that we should have a radar.
Yeah.
Out and, you know, we should have a radar that actually is able to locate these things so that we can play a part in making sure they don't happen.
Yeah.
So really as an, these things are real, it's really instructive in that way, you know?
Interesting.
And it sounds like I'm doing a big ad for Cosby right now.
Dude, you are kind of, are you trying to leverage Cosby?
I'm not, not at all. Yeah. I mean, not at all.
You've already kind of gotten what you're going to get out of Cosby, I think, right?
I mean,
with the CT stuff. You know,
yeah, I mean, I've known the guy for about a decade now.
Oh,
I mean, we have an you know, an ever, you know, deepening friendship. You know, I mean, we live in different states, and you know, we talk, you know, semi regularly. And I mean, I really respect him, and I know that I can say personally that I know his heart in which the easiest thing to do is look at this pod and go, dude, it's a hit piece on Driscoll. Sure. It's like, well, yeah, but you really need to, before you say that, you should probably listen to it because it actually isn't at all. Mm-hmm. And Cosper is the kind of guy, he's sensitive.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't go out of his way to do that. And by the way, the people that are endorsing it, they wouldn't endorse it if it was that.
Yeah.
You know.
What's Cosper's any?
Dude, that's a great question. I think he's a 5 because he's a real, like he's a thinky
guy.
He's a cerebral, you know, thinking processy.
Yeah.
Kind of guy. So he's definitely, I would bet my life he's a 5, and I think he might be.
Little 6-wing there, baby, or a 4-wing?
You know, I think he's a 5-4 because he does have that creative kind of capacity. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I don't know what you are. I'm a 4-3. So yeah, I'm like 4-3. The art guy. I'm the art guy that works a lot and gets things done.
Same.
And my 5 is like comes out in places, but it's not super pronounced.
Yeah.
But because I'm too much of a feeler.
Yeah, same.
And a 5 isn't so much of a feeler. He's just more, again, it's all more about factual. What makes sense and logic, factual, all that
stuff. I have very little of that.
Welcome to the Annie F. Downs.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Annie F. Downs.
Can you give another shout out?
Solid work. Yeah, yeah. yeah, interesting, baby. Well, I'll have to check that out. I got another question for you. This is completely kind of related because it's about entertainment. But
let's switch gears a little bit, man.
KK and I have been on this like bender of watching, and don't let this be a referendum on the person. I know, you know, we're not allowed to. We got to crap on the person so that we don't look like we're associated. But we've been watching Woody Allen movies lately, and really enjoying them. And my question to you is, like, where are you at on Woody Allen as a director? Like, what do you think of his movies?
Baby, I'm going to be honest, man. Yeah. I mean, this is, I have no clue. I've never really watched a Woody Allen movie.
Interesting.
You educate me because I'm totally out.
Yeah. Okay. So his like Apex Mountain was probably like mid 70s to the mid 80s. Right. So he did
What was his big? What was his big movie?
Dude, Annie Hall was his huge one. Manhattan. But he's done a bunch, dude. Like, he's just been prolific. He's put out a ton of movies, and I would say to some degree they're all kind of the same.
Same movie.
Yeah, but not bad. He does these real atmospheric, like, movies about New York or movies about Hollywood, and they're kind of homages to places, I would say, at some level. There's always screwed up families. There's always kind of like some wry humor vis-a-vis, you know, families or being Jewish or New York or whatever.
They're kind of like art dramas.
Yeah, they are kind of. Slash comedies. Some of them are comedies.
Yeah.
Kind of darker comedies. And I got it.
And they either do really well or they sell like four tickets at the box
office. That's it, dude. Yeah. So you'll see like a Woody Allen release, like Midnight in Paris, the one with Owen Wilson, the guy with the nose. And that one got like a bunch of promo and a huge release and made all kinds of money. And it's kind of the modern Woody Allen one that people talk about the same way that they talk about like Annie Hall or Purple Rose of Cairo or some of these older timey Woody Allen movies. But it occurred to me they're clever and nobody's making movies like that anymore. These kind of original one-off dialogue driven scripts.
Well, dude, that's 100%. Nobody's making those things. Yeah. If they are, they're like indie flicks.
So in a weird way, he's been occupying that space for a long time. And I just wondered what you thought about him. I think you would enjoy it.
So have you gotten on a kick where you're going through the entire catalog?
I'm not going through the entire catalog. I'm basically going through all the ones that are on Amazon Prime that we can watch for free.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so we've done like... we watched this one last night called Cafe Society that came out in 2016. That was the most modern one that we've seen in a while. But one called Scoop came out in 2006, kind of like a journalism comedy with Scarlett Johansson. The other thing is they've always got huge casts. Like this Scoop.
People want to work with him. He's legendary.
Dude, that's it. He's legendary. Yeah. So it had Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson, Woody Allen was in it. The one from last night had Steve Carell, Jesse Eisenberg, like a bunch of huge name people are doing these projects, which makes them kind of interesting, even if they're bad. And then the one I really liked, 1976, a movie called The Front. It was, it was about like, I don't know, like screenwriters that got blacklisted in the 50s or whatever. And, Woody Allen's character, who's really just like a con man, ends up like, fronting all these guys, like he turns in their scripts as his own, you know, whatever. But it's very Woody Allen. They're all like industry satires, you know what I mean? So they all kind of like lampoon the movie industry or publishing or whatever. You should see, though, if you're gonna watch any Woody Allen, you should watch Midnight in Paris, baby. I think you would dig it. You know, it takes place in Paris, which is just a great spot for a movie, but Kathy Bates is in it. Adrian Brody, the guy with the nose, all kinds of good people are in it. So
the guy with the nose,
Owen Wilson, where are you out the on the guy. Wilsons?
Ah, dude. I mean, have they had their day or is Owen still a player? That's my question.
I think Owen's still kind of a player.
I mean, Luke hasn't done a movie, it feels like, in 600 years.
No, dude. I was a big Luke guy, though. I'm holding on to my Luke Wilson stock, for sure.
Wasn't Luke originally... Now, I'm totally might be screwed up on this, so that no, I'm no, just no, asking. Go. Was Luke originally bigger than Owen? Wasn't he?
Dude, maybe. I think he had a couple-year run where he was bigger than Owen. He was a big Wes Anderson guy. They both were. So they both kind of got put on the map a little bit by Wes Anderson. But, like, Luke was, I think, around the... what was the New York Wes Anderson... Royal Tenenbaums. Around like Royal Tenenbaums time, Luke might have been bigger than Owen.
I wonder why he hasn't made a movie. So unless he just made a bunch of indie things that we haven't heard.
Dude, I don't know. I don't know. Let's look up his IMDb real quick.
Luke Wilson, man.
Luke Wilson. IMDb.
I think you know, Woody is one of those dudes that he's kind of polarizing too, because it's like, you know, the question of like Hollywood having morphed into this thing where you only get to put out stuff if it sells like, you know, bazillions of dollars in the box office. And then you have these directors, these old school guys like the Woodies who like Hollywood almost like has to pay attention to because he's legendary. But at the same time, a studio has to be willing to like do an art film with him that they know isn't going to make money.
Yeah.
But it's going to be an art film that they get to put in their, you know, in their catalog.
Dude, I did a little deep dive on his budgets and stuff. Like his movies all make money.
They do. Because he spends like $25 making them.
Basically. Well, no, dude, they all hit at this level. So KK and I have realized we like a certain kind of low budget movie where the budget's anywhere from like $7 to $15 million, which is kind of a pittance in Hollywood terms. It sounds like a lot in like normal human terms, but yeah, like movies that hit in that budget range, we tend to really like. And so he'll do a movie for $15 million and it'll make 25, you know, so everybody makes money.
Got it.
Or yeah, it'll make 30 or whatever. And so they're not making a ton, but they're not losing, you know, which is a great space to be in if you're a certain kind of like narrative driven filmmaker like he is.
But you're also like, but if you're like a, if you're an A or a B list celeb though, like,
yeah,
that's basically like you're willing to do it for like no money just
totally
to be able to do it.
Just to say you did a Woody Allen movie and to work with him or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of a fascinating dynamic, dude.
Baby, can we shift here for 1 second? Because we're not going to be able to do this with Pipe. So I'd like to just sort of get this one out there because we have one M. Night Shyamalan who's releasing a new movie that looks like vintage Shammy.
Yeah.
On July 23rd, called Old. I want to discuss that for a few
minutes. I know, dude. It looks like M. Night Shyamalan made a movie just for us. Like,
yeah, really.
About,
he said, hey, there's these two dudes I know.
Yeah, these two dudes. They're both
on this podcast.
They're both egomaniacs. They're both self-centered. They're both obsessed with getting older. Let's make a movie about that. So
yeah,
I did a little reading on it, a little cursory reading. Apparently the premise is they're all like lampooned on this island and like, mm-hmm, the deal with the island is they all like get old in one day. Like they do the whole like span of their life in one day, which sounds fascinating. And I'm in, dude. I'm all in. In fact, I'm worried that I'm going to miss the opening due to being on the road, like doing camp work or whatever. So I think I'm going to be back by then, but I'm not sure.
To me, the most interesting, so I want to get your hot take on this, man. But to me, the most interesting thing, I'm this guy, right? Where when M. Night comes out with a new movie, I actually don't even care what the movie is as much as I'm fascinated that people keep giving this guy money to make movies.
Okay.
So again, it's not that I don't want to see the movie.
Yeah.
But I just think when it comes to Hollywood, and I'm talking modern Hollywood.
Yeah.
Whether you love him or hate him, and there's a lot of reasons why people hate him, and I don't even disagree.
Yeah.
I like him. But it's fascinating that this guy has been able to continue to make movies. Because, dude, when you talk about a career with some ups and downs, you're talking about M. Night.
You know what, dude? I respect that, though. Because, like,
I do too.
I like a career with ups and downs. And in fact, I don't trust a career that doesn't have ups and downs because
you don't trust Quentin Tarantino.
Well, dude, even Tarantino's had some, like, to me, some downs. So I do trust that. And the thing I like about Tarantino is I feel like he's always done exactly what he's wanted. So,
well, I think that's the thing.
The four in me really resonates with that on like an integrity level, because I feel, and I'm not talking about morals or whatever, I'm talking about just doing what you want. And I feel
the craft of a movie.
Yeah. I feel like he's always done what he's wanted. I feel some of that was Shammy too, dude. So
well,
like,
that's what I was going to ask. Do you feel like he's always done what he wants? But dude, I mean, nobody in the world is going to have the kind of credibility that Tarantino does.
Right.
Certainly not M. Night, because he makes different kinds of movies.
Well, dude, and they've had
he
a
makes
different
kitschy movies.
They've been responded to differently. Okay, so I think there was a time, and I'm going to get the years wrong, but maybe like late '90s, where we would have put Shammy and Tarantino on the same level of like they were getting stroked artistically by the same people. Whereas now it's become cool to crap on Shammy and platform Tarantino. Just in whatever, I don't know, hipster film circles or whatever, you're supposed to kind of like chuckle and roll your eyes about Shammy, even though he's made some really good movies. You know,
I think here's the problem is I think what Sham did was, man, he made Sixth Sense, and it's been a grind for him ever since then. Because when you come out of the gate with something that iconic, and you don't follow it up. I mean, again, I think Unbreakable is great and all of that, but like, in the eyes of the public, he never he was never able to rise back to that like level of movie where I mean, dude, we, you know, half the lines in that movie have become like, you know, iconic cultural like phrases.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I see dead people and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get a guy like Tarantino who does Pulp Fiction. He did, what did he do? Reservoir Dogs before
Reservoir
that?
Dogs, Pulp Fiction. Yeah, all the Kill Bills.
Yeah, and you're getting into like, oh my gosh, this guy had a decade run where he never lost.
Yeah.
He just won artistically, like everything was just at the top and everybody was buying and drinking it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Know it. I know it.
And, you know, and then you get Sham who did like, well, I hated The Village, you know, I'm not saying personally, but like people loved Sixth Sense, but they didn't love everything that came out after it.
Yeah.
Whereas with like, I feel like with Tarantino, it's like, well, dude, it doesn't mean you don't love some stuff more than other stuff. But, dude, you, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who said, oh, I hated Kill Bill.
Dude, I feel like Sham, though, the thing that's respectable, he got in there, he took his cuts, he made the movies that he wanted to make. Like, it would have been easy for him to settle into, like, kind of weird, thoughtful, supernatural thriller space after The Sixth Sense. But then he made The Village, which is kind of a departure. I'm a big The Village guy, though. I'm a The Village defender. I know it's like it's cool and hipster to hate The Village, whatever. But I enjoy the movie. Where are you out on The Village,
dude? I loved The Village, man. And again, this is all personal stuff.
Sure, sure.
But I liked that he did a period piece that wasn't actually a period piece.
Yeah,
that was part of the twist for me. Mm-hmm. And I loved the no twist twist.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was every bit as brilliant as the stuff he does where there's the supernatural, like, element to it kind of a thing. So this thing was like, dude, the guy literally did the only thing the guy could do, which is I'm going to have the twist at the end, which is technically not a twist, but a twist.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
And I just thought, I don't know, man. I absolutely loved and still love The Village.
Same, dude. Same.
I love it. I think it's in fact, I would say I like it more than Sixth Sense.
I do too.
To me, Unbreakable and The Village are my two M. Night jams.
Yeah, I like it as a rewatcher, man. It's very rewatchable.
It's very rewatchable.
I like it as
I don't really
I like it as a commentary on human behavior. I think it's really interesting on that level. Which makes it more of a starter for me than even like a lot of the Tarantino movies. Like the early Tarantinos, well, I'm not a Pulp Fiction guy, which I know is like anathema in like cool person circles. So I'm gonna get killed for that. But like, I'm not a Pulp Fiction guy. I don't know. It was just too dark. It was too dark.
I
don't get into it.
I understand that. And again, this is also personally driven. Yeah. I also can say it was too dark. It's, you know, I'm never gonna go watch it again. But I understand that it's this amazing
movie. Oh, same. Yeah, yeah. Like I understand what people view as amazing about it. I just don't.
But there is a sense of like, I totally agree. Like I will probably, I'm not saying never, but like I have no desire to go watch Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
But if you told me, hey, Big R, let's go watch The Village tonight, I'd be like, oh, dude, I'm all in, man. I'll make the popcorn.
Totally,
you know
what I mean? Totally. Yeah.
So, so it's that, like you said, there's a watchability about some films that even though you might say, no, that film was great, I just never want to watch it again.
Totally. Totally. Know? Yeah, that's a real
I loved it as a one-time shot. You know, it was great for that.
Definitely.
You know, like kind of, I would say this, like, most of Christopher Nolan's movies to me, I think they're great the first time.
Yeah.
I never have a ton of desire to go watch them again.
Dude, I'm totally not a Nolan guy. I don't think I've ever really liked a Christopher Nolan movie, to be honest with you. Mm. I just can't, I don't know.
What is it about it? Like, what is it about his films?
I think they're so high concept as to be, to me, bereft of anything interesting on a character level. Like, well, and I'm such a character guy.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I'm just not a guy who gets excited about high concepts. That's not where I end up, you know, movie wise.
It is like it. I mean, he is the nerd Twitter like filmmaker.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. At the end of the day,
so
When you go that high concept, what it means always is you're never going to have enough time to do character development.
Yeah, that's right.
That's just the reality of it.
That's right. That's right.
And he kind of, I would say the thing that he got closest to that with was Interstellar, because that movie is like 17 hours long.
Ugh.
And he was able to kind of, there was some heart and soul in that movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know, on that level, it was like, all right, you know, you kind of felt some things in that, but most of his movies, you don't really feel a lot.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to feel, you know,
they're not feely.
I want to feel something for the characters. And I think,
right.
If I don't feel anything for the characters, I want it to be a, I don't know, something fun. I want it to be John Wick. You know what I mean? Where have you seen the John Wicks, dude? And we got to end on this because I got to go coach.
I saw the last one.
Yeah, dude, you should see them all. They're to me like really interesting on the like set design level, and they're fun. I mean, they're stupid. It's kind of like watching somebody play a video game, but it's I do care about the character. Like I care about the John Wick character, and they make you care about him a little bit, which I think is kind of rare for a action-y gun movie like
that. Man, I enjoyed it again, man. When we're on our 27th fight,
yeah,
you know, right. It's like my eyes are sort of glazing over at that
point. Yeah, you're checking your
And I know that's what everyone geeks out about. That's the whole point of it. But
yeah.
I conceptually I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Interesting. Maybe this has been fun. We got to cover a little like non-pipe ground here.
We did.
And we got some things done, man. We got a little serious.
You know, when Pipe hears you say that, he's gonna disagree with that. He's gonna say, "What? We can talk about that with me." He's gonna be totally offended by that. And I kind of like that he is.
I like that too, dude. It means he needs us, you know?
Correct.
Because there are times when I wonder if Pipe doesn't feel anything for us. We're like characters in a Christopher Nolan movie to him. You know what I mean?
I think we might be that to him.
But to me, we're like characters in a Woody Allen movie. We're like the character in the rated R movie. You're not quite sure. You know what I mean?
You're not quite sure where he's going, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the NEF Down.
Exactly, dude. That's the new Enneagram. Like you give somebody an MPAA rating instead of a number.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it.
We should do that. That'll be our
That's going to be our moneymaker. Baby, we're finally going to make money together. Finally, after all these years.
Baby, we've
done what we always do, which is gasupvisualtheology.church. Visit that website, buy some stuff. So we did that. We talked a little serious, like Drisky stuff. We talked a little movies. This was fun.
Little movies, yeah.
Baby, almost 42 minutes of good radio here.
It's big. It's
huge, big. Dude. It's
a triumph.
Yeah, for a non-pipe episode, this is a triumph of modern radio. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.